Track 2. Hello and welcome to the news, recorded on Wednesday the 22nd of February. I'm Beth.
I'm Sue.
And I'm Joyce.
And your sound engineers this week are Martin and John. Next, we would like to say a big thank you to the listeners who have kindly sent us a donation last week toward the funding of our talking news and magazines. That they are Joan Simmons. So once again, thank you for your donations, which really count towards the talking newspaper and magazine. And now Sue will start us off with the news.
Bin collections will be cut to fortnightly, and a new tip are planned as part of a revamp of Wolverhampton's waste collection services. The cash-strapped authority has drawn up the cost-cutting measures in a bid to save £2.4 million a year as part of wider plans to make £54.6 million of savings by 2019 to 2020. They include creating a new tip on land off Hickman Avenue in East Park, in a move that will see the closure of the city's two tips at Anchor Lane and Shore Road. Bins will be emptied fortnightly instead of weekly. Controversial food waste buckets will be scrapped, while a charge of £35 a year will be levied on residents, taking up a new 42-week garden waste collection service. And the authority says it plans to publish details later this year of a new scheme enabling households to take larger 240 or 360-litre bins for household waste. Councillor Steve Evans, Wolverhampton's council's environmental boss, said, "People understand that we have to save money due to government cuts and can see that we are trying to be sensible in our approach and do it in a way that causes minimum disruption." A report to the authorities' cabinet said the annual £11.5 million cost of household waste and recycling services was no longer affordable in the wake of continued government funding cuts. It follows a consultation that saw thousands of people have their say on the future of waste management in the city. A total of 47% of 13,925 respondents supported the new tip plans, while 39% were against it and 14% undecided. Meanwhile, 73% of 2,260 people were in favour of getting rid of food buckets, and 55% of 2,269 respondents backed moving domestic waste collections to fortnightly in order to balance the books. However, 65% of 6,567 people who took the consultation said they would not be willing to pay £35 to have their garden rubbish collected.
A move to equip all police officers in Staffordshire with spit guards has been given the go-ahead. Days after West Midlands Police announced that they had no plans to use the hoods. All Staffordshire police officers will be provided with spit guards as personal issue on their utility belts after the move was backed by Police and Crime Commissioner Matthew Ellis. Spit hoods are mesh fabric hoods placed over the heads of suspects to prevent spitting or biting. Last week, a spokesman for West Midlands Police said there were no plans for the hoods, although West Midlands Police Federation Chairman Tom Codiford said talks had taken place over the use. Staffordshire has previously made them available in police vehicles and custody blocks, but not to every officer as part of standard issue kit. The move comes after significant national debate, which has seen public opinion divided. The PCC offered Chief Constable Jane Sawyers the funding to equip all officers with spit guards, having listened to views expressed by each side of the debate. Mr. Ellis said, "This subject has attracted some controversy nationally, but we should not ask officers to carry out their work in protecting the public without protecting them. I've seen body cam footage of an arrest in Staffordshire where the individual being detained spat at officers. Physical violence can make the police's job very difficult, but the wait, often for weeks, for an officer to find out if being spat at has caused infection, such as hepatitis, must be horrendous for the officer and their family.
Tributes have been paid to world-class West Midlands hairdresser Trevor Leddington, who has died at the age of 74. The award-winning hairstylist, who worked alongside top names Vidal Sassoon, Raymond and Trevor Sorby, during his lengthy career, died on February the 8th, 5 months after being diagnosed with cancer. Mr. Leddington started his successful business in Brierley Hill High Street in 1961. He initially started out in a small unit above another shop before moving in 1969 to bigger premises on the High Street, where the popular salon has remained ever since. He also ran a second salon in Quinton for around a decade from 1980. But it was on the competition circuit that he really made his name. In 1974, he achieved world champion status when the British team for women's hairstyling won a gold medal in an international competition. That same year, he won a coveted gold trophy for ladies' creative styling as an individual competitor. Competition success opened doors to many further opportunities, and he went on to take part in trade demonstrations across the world. He also became a trainer, represented Britain at the Skills Olympics, became an international judge, an assessor for City and Guilds, and sat on many industry committees. His son Wayne said, "It was in the 70s and 80s that he was most successful. Back in those days, it was all competitions." He said his dad was offered the chance to manage 14 salons in Canada at one stage, and he had lots of opportunities, but he always stayed local. Such was his esteem in the hairdressing world, Mr. Leddington Sr. was awarded a prestigious award by the National Hairdressers Federation, honouring his lifetime's dedication to hairstyling, which was presented by Trevor Sorby at a ceremony at Aston Villa in 2012. Wayne continued, "Although he wasn't a London hairdresser, he was in that sort of league. He was ambitious, but he wasn't looking for celebrity status. He was quite happy and quietly confident that he knew his industry." He said his dad ventured into the profession against his father's wishes, and he added, "I think he wanted to be a barber because he didn't want to work in a foundry, as his father did." He started hairdressing in the 1950s, when male hairdressing became in vogue. His wife Jane, now 72, also started out in hairdressing before branching out into beauty. Together they had two children, Wayne and Jason, but tragically Jason was killed at the age of 29 in a parachuting accident in 1998. After more than 50 years in hairdressing, Mr. Leddington Sr. retired in 2009 from his Brierley Hill shop, which is now run by surviving son Wayne, aged 51. But even after handing over the baton, he continued to put the odd shift in at the salon, and Wayne said he loved his industry, and that continued until the week before he died. He was still cutting close friends here at home.
A Ferris wheel will not be returning to a black country town this year because traders have failed to reach an agreement with ride operators over the costs. The Dudley Eye gained national interest back in 2016 when controversial TV presenter Piers Morgan said there could be no grimmer panorama view than Dudley. The ride actually attracted 13,500 people to the town centre, beating its football target by more than 62%, and organisers said it could return in 2017. But traders from Dudley who organise the ride to come to the town have now revealed that it will not be returning this year because a price could not be agreed. Len Lenningham, Managing Director of Dudley Market Traders Association, said, "The deal is just not right for us at the moment. We haven't been able to come to a financial conclusion, but we are still hopeful of being able to agree a decision with the operators at a later date." Operators of the ride did not originally want to visit Dudley last year because they felt that the town would not offer them a significant footfall. But traders eventually convinced them. Dudley traders paid around £10,000 for the ride to come, but were hoping for a reduction this year. However, both parties have not been able to agree on a price. The ride quickly earned the nickname the Dudley Eye after setting up next to Stone Street and Priory Street. Mr. Lenningham said that plans to bring other attractions and events to Dudley Town Centre were in the pipeline.
Two West Midlands police officers have been charged over an alleged conspiracy to steal and supply drugs. PC Wahid Husman and PC Tasib Majid were both based in Perry Bar, and they face charges including drug offences, conspiracy to steal, and misconduct in a public office. The constables were immediately suspended from duty following their charge. Six other people were arrested in early morning raids across the West Midlands area earlier this month. Husman, aged 47, faces charges of four counts of conspiracy to commit misconduct in a public office and two counts of conspiracy to steal. He is also charged with conspiracy to possess Class A drugs with intent to supply and conspiracy to possess Class B drugs with intent to supply. Majid, aged 35, has been charged with conspiracy to commit misconduct in a public office, two counts of conspiracy to steal, conspiracy to possess Class A drugs with intent to supply, conspiracy to possess Class B drugs with intent to supply, and unlawful disclosure of personal information, which is data protection.
Opposition leaders on Dudley Council have vowed to block plans to hike up council tax by almost 5%. Dudley UKIP leader, Councillor Paul Brothwood, and Dudley Conservative Group leader, Councillor Patrick Harley, have confirmed they will not support the Labour Group's bid to increase council tax by 4.99%. The Council's Cabinet originally approved a 3.99% rise last November as part of measures to save the authority £18 million in 2017-18. But soon after, the government gave the green light for authorities to increase the adult social care precept from 2% to 3% to help fund care for the elderly, disabled and people in need. In light of this, authority bosses have proposed a 4.99% increase, with 3% going to fund adult social care and 1.99% going to the general fund as planned. But both UKIP and the Conservatives have hit out against the rise. Councillor Brothwood has already branded it unpalatable and said his group would vote against it. And Councillor Harley said at last week's Cabinet meeting on February the 8th, "We would like to know where it's being spent. It's important to know where we are going to put the additional funding. It's not peanuts, it's nearly £14 million of additional funding. We want to know where it's going and that it's being targeted for groups that need it the most." Councillor David Sparks, Dudley's Cabinet Member for Finance, stressed the money would go toward vital spending on adult social care and said the matter would be debated in detail at full council, where all groups would have a chance to put forward proposals.
One tortoise, a dead pigeon, six pairs of underpants, a urine sample and 14 swords. These are just some of the hundreds of items marked as lost and found property by police forces in Staffordshire and the West Midlands over the past 2 years. The forces have revealed the unusual collection of items, which also includes weapons, sports equipment and clothes. Less surprising is wallets, purses and their contents being the most common items handed in. Hundreds of debit and credit cards, driving licence, bus passes, identity cards and money have all been handed in, as have keys, mobile phones and passports. Weapons such as daggers and knives are also included in a list dating back to 2015, but both forces have since set up weapon surrender bins where these can also be taken. In terms of animals, West Midlands Police no longer accept these being handed into them, while Staffordshire Police advise that people who have found animals go first to the local authority, the RSPCA or local vets. Staffordshire Police policy is that if property is not claimed after 28 days, it will be auctioned, recycled or disposed of responsibly, with all personal data being removed and securely destroyed. The force also states that the finders may be able to keep items they have discovered if they remain unclaimed after 28 days, but on the understanding that if the owner comes back, the finder must give it back. This doesn't include certain items with personal information, including mobile phones, ID documents, weapons and war medals. Cash may also be claimed by the finder after 28 days. Meanwhile, West Midlands Police work with Aston's auctioneers in Dudley to sell such found property, as well as crime-recovered items and those seized under the Proceeds of Crime Act. On the force's website, it states, police forces can sell the items and plough the money raised back into community initiatives.
A family whose house was severely damaged in a gas blast more than a year ago have finally been allowed to move back in. The explosion on December the 28th, 2015, completely obliterated a home on Penn Road, Wolverhampton, belonging to pensioner Wendy Ayoub. The scale of destruction also forced out next-door neighbours Daljit and Kulbip Upal and their 20-year-old son, Sam. What was left of Miss Ayoub's house was demolished due to safety reasons, and the Upals had to move out of their home, which was also badly damaged. Mr. Upal, aged 49, said, "We finally got the keys back over the weekend, but we are going to doing the move over the period of a few weeks. There is a lot to do." The family have lived in this home for more than 20 years before the incident. Most of the property survived, but the blast blew a giant hole in the side of the house, causing bricks to crash into the dining room, where Mrs. Upple, aged 49, had been just moments before. It also caused extensive damage to their newly renovated kitchen, while a new driveway also had to be ripped up to repair the gas main, which led to the explosion. As a result, a large part of the home had to be rebuilt, meaning the family has had to rent a two-bedroom semi-detached house on Dudley Road, close to their business. Upals, sweet makers and caterers. To add insult to injury, the property was burgled twice in the aftermath. "We went through a lot. Work started in about September, and then we thought we might be in by December, but there were more delays. Now it is just relief, absolute relief, that we are finally going back home."
Controversial screens, which allegedly segregated disabled and elderly worshippers at a Sikh temple, will be removed after a deal was made in landmark legal proceedings. Five disabled worshippers at the Guru Nanak Gurdwara in Blakenhall in Wolverhampton had brought legal action against the temple's ruling committee, claiming they had been discriminated against. It was alleged that members of the congregation who are unable to sit on the floor, as is the usual custom, were being forced to sit behind screens in the prayer hall and dining room. A trial had been due to start at Birmingham County Court, but a deal was struck between the two sides last week. The agreement requires bosses to remove all of the screens from both rooms, as well as signs which prohibited the use of chairs and wheelchairs. In addition, a lift will be installed, providing access to the first floor prayer hall and all necessary auxiliary aids, as set out by Wolverhampton Council, will be permitted, including chairs with armrests. The ruling committee must also pay the claimants' costs as part of the deal, which are understood to be in excess of £150,000. The case is believed to be the first of its kind internationally and could impact practices at Sikh Gurdwaras up and down the country.
A Dudley doctor who wrote a love letter to a patient has been struck off. Dr. Sashiandra Amaragiri told the woman she had struck some distant chord in him almost 6 weeks after he gave her a colonoscopy at Russell's Hall Hospital. The letter, which was sent to the woman's home address by special delivery in October 2015, said, "When you stepped into my clinic for the first time, I was completely stunned and taken aback by your presence. You twanged some distant chord which had laid dormant in me for so many years. You induced this unusual, extraordinary, tender feelings of weakness in my emotional setting. To this day, I have been unable to fathom this power you hold over me. But after receiving the letter in which he invited her to meet him for a drink, the woman reported him to the police and the General Medical Council. The victim, known as Patient A, said, "The whole incident has left me shocked and shaken. I have found it very intimidating. I went for a procedure, a colonoscopy, and I was completely naked from the waist down. Dr. Amarangiri was looking at my personal area and I had put my trust in him. I felt completely violated. It was not as if the doctor was treating my arm. It was a very private area, a personal area, which I had trusted him with. Quite a few weeks after the letter, I still felt very scared. I have still been left very frightened by the whole situation. I do not want to see any doctor ever again." Dr. Amarangiri apologised to the woman and his colleagues at the hospital via letters to the GMC. Mr. Amarangiri's name was removed from the medical register after he was found guilty of misconduct at a medical practitioner's tribunal service hearing, which he did not attend.
Briarley Hill's historic market hall is set to be sold for around £1 million, it has been revealed. An agreement has finally been reached over the landmark building in a deal to pave the way for fresh investment in the indoor market and end uncertainty over its future. It will be taken over by a consortium comprising of some of the current owners, meaning that it will remain in the family, which has owned it for almost a century. The deal, which is expected to be completed in the coming weeks, brings assurances for traders about their future in the High Street. There has been concerns about what the building changing hands could mean for the town's indoor market. Market manager Steve Banks said it is very positive news and means there will be new investment in the building itself. Money will be put into new facilities once everything is complete. Things are getting more buoyant in there. Traders are more positive about the place, and hopefully that will come through to the customers. Mr. Banks said upgrades at the market would include new ground floor toilets, including disabled facilities, as well as improvements to the outdoor market. A letter has been sent out to traders from Mr. Banks and fellow market manager Wayne Jones, informing them of the development. Briarley Hill councillor Rachel Harris said the news was a huge boost for the town. She said, "This market is so important to Briarley Hill. It is the heart of the High Street, and I'm really pleased that someone is prepared to step in and put the investment in so we can receive it and show people the best we can offer for Briarley Hill." The market hall, as it looks today, was built in 1930. It has been in the hands of the Shapiro family since the 1920s. Around 100 stallholders are based at the market hall, selling a range of products.
Council workers in Dudley are set to vote on whether to strike over proposed changes to their working conditions. Staff rejected proposals put forward by council bosses, which could see some workers made to pay for parking and mileage allowances slashed, in an initial ballot to test the water to see if there was an appetite for action. Unite Union said workers would now be balloted on whether to strike if the council does not back down on the changes, which will affect 280 staff. Regional Officer Brian Ricketts said, "We will be discussing the ballot result with our reps and members in the coming week. We are then very likely to proceed to a full-scale industrial action ballot, which will include a proposal for strike action. In the meantime, we urge the council bosses to get around the table to negotiate in a constructive manner."
A councillor says she's been going round in circles trying to get something done about speeding motorists charging up and down a busy route near Stourbridge, used by thousands of commuters each day. Worcestershire County Councillor for the Clent Hills Division, Rachel Jenkins, says she's been pushing for action to put the brakes on fast and furious motorists on Hagley Hill since she was first elected as a county representative in 2013. But she claims she has hit a dead end despite repeated pleas for help. Councillor Jenkins, who also represents Hagley East on Bromsgrove District Council, said, "It is outrageous that residents of Hagley have to put up with high levels of speeding up and down the Birmingham Road stretch of the A456, known as Hagley Hill. Over the past 4 years, I've been told one thing, then another. Worcestershire County Council, police and the Safer Roads Partnership have all played their part in this merry-go-round." She said cars consistently average in excess of 50 miles per hour along the busy dual carriageway, but she added it's been going round in circles for the past 4 years. A spokesman for Worcestershire County Council said the speed limit in this location is monitored and considered appropriate, and enforcement is a matter for the police. While a spokesman for Warwickshire Police and West Mercia Police Safer Roads Partnership said, "Unfortunately, establishing a speed enforcement site by the Safer Roads Partnership was not possible, as there was not a safe or suitable location to carry out enforcement. In order to provide public reassurance, there has been some police presence at this site, and the local Safer Neighbourhood team continue to monitor the situation."
The most dangerous junctions in the Black Country have been revealed. The most accident-prone junction was found to be on the Ring Road in Wolverhampton, according to new research. The crossroads between the A4150 Ring Road St John's and A459 Birmingham Road has seen no fewer than 16 accidents between 2014 and 2016. Although the majority of the accidents were minor, three were serious. Chapel Ash Island, just outside of the city centre, saw 13 accidents during the same period. Council chiefs say that their programme of road safety improvements has seen the number of people killed or seriously hurt in Wolverhampton from 126 in 2004 to 67 last year. Elsewhere in the Black Country, there has been 9 incidents on one junction in Sandwell. The junction between West Bromwich High Street and A4031 Trinity Way saw 8 minor incidents and 1 serious incident. In Dudley, the Cinder Bank Island has seen the most incidents with 9, while the Castlegate Island has seen 8. Councillor Hilary Bills said that plans were in place to improve the Cinderbank Island. In Walsall, the roundabout between A4148 Broadway and Birmingham Road was the most prolific, with 10 incidents between 2014 and 2016, with 1 being serious. In South Staffordshire, the Gailey Interchange has seen 9 minor incidents, as well as 1 serious and 1 fatal incident. The data comes from crashmap.co.uk.
New findings have suggested that footballers who repeatedly head the ball can end up suffering from dementia, prompting calls for more research into a long-suspected issue in the sport. A potential cause of dementia thought to arise from blows to the head has for the first time been confirmed in a group of retired footballers following a small study. Dawn Astle, daughter of former England and West Brom striker Jeff Astle, who died of a degenerative brain disease in 2002, aged 59, said such findings are no surprise. She expressed her frustration that there has not been more research done on the matter in the years since her father's death, and criticised a perceived lack of action by footballing authorities as indefensible and disgraceful. She said, "The evidence is mounting. It is sad to read. I am not surprised. It doesn't shock me at all. It's too late for Dad. The research is so important for current players and for future players. That's why we need it. I think that's what's so very frustrating. The fact that it's nearly 15 years since my dad died and the fact that nothing from any footballing authorities has been done. It is really indefensible and disgraceful. It really is. This isn't an arthritis or a bruised leg or a broken leg. People are dying. This is killing people. The brains of six of the 14 retired players involved in the research, none of whom have been identified, underwent post-mortem examinations and four were found to have chronic traumatic encephalopathy, CTE, pathology, while all six had signs of Alzheimer's disease. CTE can cause dementia and, like Alzheimer's, is characterised by a build-up of abnormal tau protein in the brain. The rate of CTE detected in the footballers' brains was greater than the 12% average found in a previous study which looked at 268 brains from the general population. And with that final news item, we'll now make way for this week's notices. So it's goodbye from Beth.
It's goodbye from Sue.
And it's goodbye from Joyce.